Hi, welcome to the Bowen Buzz podcast. I'm your host, Chris Reed, and I'm talking the buzz on Bowen therapy for therapists, clients, educators, or anyone interested in the soft tissue industry. The show where we get to meet interesting Bowen practitioners, trainers, and where we get to hear from experts sharing their secrets to assist Bowen therapists growing their businesses and growing their lives. Welcome to the Bowen Buzz. Today we get to meet Margaret Spicer. Margaret is an international, well-known Bowen instructor, and great to take an opportunity to catch up with Margaret here in Sydney. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Chris.
Great to have you along on the Bowen Buzz. Margaret, a lot of people in the Bowen world have heard of you, perhaps, or maybe even been in one of your classes, but I'd like to go back a little bit and just sort of find out, well, first of all, where did you start in, I mean, you weren't always a Bowen therapist or Bowen instructor. Where did you start in work, perhaps, even?
Well, I've been in health all my life. I left school and I did pharmacy, so I was a pharmacist in retail, and then I worked in the pharmaceutical industry in actually marketing for about 6.5-7 years, and then I took a U-turn and did a 4-year full-time naturopathic course.
What drove you to do that? If you've gone through a degree and lots of hours of study, and you're working as a pharmacist in, as you say, in the actually out at the coalface, mm-hmm. and then working for what people might call big pharma these days, what was the catalyst to sort of that made you sort of think, well, there's something different?
Well, I guess I've always been a bit of a thinker, in the sense that when people had come in and they'd say they were really stressed and they'd been to see somebody and they were told they had to stay on blood pressure tablets for 100 years, or they had a skin condition, they were just given yet another cream, and yet nothing seemed to hold or last a long time. And I was also thrown into a situation where I was offered a position where I would be marketing some of the sorts of pharmaceuticals which I didn't actually like. And so I started to look around, and it was almost an overnight decision. It was, let's do it differently, and it was almost let's explore alternative therapies.
So did your ethics and morals get in the way of a good career?
Not really. I think, well, in a way, but there was something inside me that knew it wasn't my path.
Right.
I was doing it, and at the same time I was doing it, I was exploring other things. Mm. And I've done other bits and pieces. I've done a couple of years. I hadn't finished it, but I did a couple of years of a Master of Commerce. I did a year of law. I was thinking of specialising in medical law. And but it was this. I was offered a job in the US, and interestingly enough, a person I knew asked me to tell them what the job was all about, and it was almost I heard myself trying to justify to myself why I was doing it, and I'm thinking, hang on here, maybe we've got to think left field a little bit. And so I resigned, and I decided I would travel around Australia for a year or so before I made up my mind what to do. And interestingly enough, I was up in Queensland at a place called Mission Beach, and I was just sort of thinking, well, what am I going to do next? I always knew I could fall back on pharmacy. I knew I could fall back in the industry side of it if I wanted to. And it was almost like, and this is going to sound a little bit left field, it was almost like out of the blue, I had this really strong thought from do alternative medicine, and I thought, if I wasn't crazy before, now I probably am. And so I started to explore, where will I do this? And I actually went across to Perth And they kept on saying, well, the best courses are in Sydney. So I ended up enrolling a course in Sydney, and that was about 1985, the beginning of 85. And I had no idea what I was going to meet when I walked into class, because in those days it was almost considered the massage sandals and calico brigade.
Mm, mm.
But I walked into class and I actually found, and the college I went to had set up a really good four-year course. They were looking at a 3,000-hour course. It was as close as they saw at the time was to a higher education course, right, in natural therapies.
Right.
And so I did it, and I anticipated I would specialise in probably nutrition and medical herbalism, and oh, okay, to a certain extent that was my background,
mm,
and it was very easy for me.
Right.
And even though I did four years or three full years and another bit of body work, and I also did homeopathy and quite a few of the other things like Touch for Health, etc., as electives.
So you've got a really broad grounding, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Across a lot of spectrums of alternative or natural medicine, as we call it these, yeah, days, perhaps. So what led you to Bowen? Was it?
I'm still wondering. I am still wondering. I ask the same question of students, and they usually have a story. They went to somebody and they had something wrong, and they had this miraculous thing happen, or somebody told them out. I had no idea. I saw a brochure once and I thought, I should do that.
Right.
And I'd only 12 months beforehand.
I mean, maybe you were still looking, do you,
well,
think?
No, I was in practice by this. Well, I'm sure I was.
Mm.
I was in practice from late 89, and I probably saw a leaflet about 92,
right,
talking about Bowen, and something in me said, oh, you should do that.
Mm.
But in those days, there was only Ozzie and Elaine as teachers, and they would only come to Sydney a couple of times a year. And I, by that stage, was lecturing at one of the naturopathic colleges,
right,
in some of the integrative medicine type things. And it was always the beginning of the year, and I just literally couldn't get the time off. And then for some reason, I also can't remember whether Ozzie and Elaine came early or the college started later, I ended up doing the course in February 1994.
So the basic Bowen with Ozzie and Elaine, over that 4 days.
Over that 4 days.
Mm.
And it was an interesting 4 days too, because 12 months beforehand I'd done some deep tissue Rolfing Heller work type,
aye,
thing. And then I sat in class watching people do the same moves very lightly with Bowen, where we had elbows and,
right,
forearms in the body. So there's part of me going, what's happening here? The other area I kind of got really interested in, once again, I put off for a long time. When I was going through naturopathic college, a lot of my friends and colleagues did Vipassana meditation courses, which are the 10-day silent retreats.
Right.
And I thought to myself, why would you want to do that? But anyway, I thought, well, you're not going to get anywhere if you can't say you like it or don't like it unless you have a go.
Mm.
And so I booked in to do one, and I'm sitting there on day one, and everything started moving, literally moving. And I think, my God, what's that? Is that an earthquake or something,
right,
or other? And I also thought, gosh, if this is day one, what's day 10 going to be like? And it turned out it was the day of the Newcastle earthquake here.
Oh, oh.
And I was up in the Blue Mountains here just out of Sydney, and we really felt there was an 8-point-something. Oh, no, it was an 8. I can't remember, but it was quite a strong earthquake, and a lot of Newcastle was demolished.
Mm.
And we felt it very strongly up there, and so I was actually feeling the buildings.
Right, moving.
But that was an interesting experience. But also, sitting there in silence, basically for 9 or 10 days, after a while you started to experience, as you thought of something, you'd feel something happening in your body. And I'm thinking, this is very interesting. So that got me sort of looking at that whole focusing mindfulness aspect linked to whatever I was doing. And I think the first course I did in that was around about 89. Well, it was 89, because that's when the earthquake was. And I did several of them over the next few years. And so once again, when I started Bowen in 94, and somebody would do a move on me, I'm thinking, this is interesting, this is going to all these sorts of places. And I used to teach a subject, or I put it together actually, for one of the colleges here, and we kind of called it naturopathic diagnosis at the time. And it was looking at all the elements of the various modalities out there, whether it was anything from the Touch for Health, looking at things, some of the reflexology maps, some of the Chinese face maps, to the chiropractic charts with the various areas that are influenced by the various levels of the spine. And I used to get the students to do this assignment where they had to spend the term going out and looking at all these various forms of maps and then coming back with various individual disease states mapped to that, as how could they, with the modalities they had at their fingertips, help support the body or the person that was coming to see them. And because of, I did this assignment also for homeopathy at one stage, really looking at the philosophical basis of homeopathy. And it's very similar to the basis of acupuncture and even the more pure osteopathic type way of looking at the intelligence of the system. And so when I saw some of the Touch for Health work and their way of accessing the intelligence, I started looking at how that could all be kind of worked with. And so when I started with Bowen, and people would lie on the table and say, I don't know what you did, and I literally would just do as we were told in class, because I was exploring it, I'd only just learnt it. And people would be on the table and they'd stand up and say, I don't know what you did, but you took my fear away. And I'm thinking, that's interesting, I just did the moves. And so I thought, you know, there's a lot to this therapy, and I really, I'm just one of those people that just explores it. But I don't go exploring. I wait till something happens. I'm a bit lazy like that. I wait till something happens, think, well, that was interesting, I wonder what that was all about. And then I go explore it.
Try and find out the mechanism.
Absolutely. And I guess my greatest teachers through all of this have been those clients I've had on the table. They come in with huge range of different problems. And I learn from my colleagues. I do learn from books. I learn from all sorts of things. But I've very much learnt to highly respect the intelligence of the being, the intelligence of the body, that intelligence that keeps us alive, that intelligence that gives us the symptoms and the signs and guides us with whispers if we choose to listen or wait for the shouts. And I guess I find Bowen an extremely good technique to work with that. And I think a lot of it is because if you can get your client involved in their treatment, and some of it is not so much, I don't like using words like mindfulness techniques. I'm really just asking them, are you feeling anything when I do these moves? And if you do, where are you feeling it? And you can do the same moves and they go to very different places on different people, which makes you wonder, what are these moves? And then you start to look at, and what's been very interesting over the last probably 10 years or so is the knowledge that has come about in that whole fascial, it's not an industry, the whole fascial work network and understanding around the world. And add that to the the 5,000-year-old or whatever it is, traditions of meridians, and especially when you link it to the muscle meridians, because it's, we in Bowen work on muscles, tendons, ligaments, basically, and you start to see that connectiveness, and you can look at it very much physically, emotionally, or mentally. But just bring the awareness of the client there, and they will tell you all sorts of things.
Mm, mm. And is that what brought you to sort of develop the course with
Ann Schubert?
With Ann Schubert.
Is that how we did that. That was interesting because I'd been working with the muscle meridian links and Bowen, and because I was a naturopath, I guess I didn't have the normal bodywork practitioner clientele.
Right. Mm.
I had a lot of people with internal disorders or systems
disorders. They come to you primarily for that.
For naturopathy. They'd end up with a half an hour treatment, half an hour naturopathic, and they'd get half an hour of Bowen. And then I started to see they were getting more effect from the Bowen treatment. Now, I was also very aware of the ability of Bowen to help balance the nervous system. You start to balance the nervous system, and then you get the cascade goes down through all the other, be it endocrine or immune systems and that. And so I started to do more and more Bowen because I realised if I did that for a few treatments, then I would get to the core of what they needed rather than a lot of people just give a lot of supplements. And so I started working like that. I started looking at the meridians, the links, the disorders, what they were feeling, what sort of whatever from the background I had. And it was at the 2000 conference in the Gold Coast that I gave the first talk about it. And we had an instructor at the time who was also an instructor for Touch for Health, Margaret Tuinga from Melbourne, and I was very interested to be able to talk with her about it. And we actually thought that in a sense the guy that put a lot of the Touch for Health together and Tom Bowen were probably working about
the same time. Mm.
But anyway, I gave the presentation on what I'd been doing with the work and how I was seeing the effects through these other areas at the same conference, and Schubert got up and she talked about the work that she'd been doing as well. And from there, the two of us put it together. Mm. We went across. And
when you say you were sort of looking at the work you've been doing with it and noticing effects, just for maybe those people that haven't done the course, that is called Mind Body Bowen, how were you doing it a little bit differently perhaps, or using it as a diagnostic tool, was it?
What were you noticing,
and how were you working with it at the time?
Well, what we're doing, if you recognise that there's an intelligence in the body, and the best example, and I use this in class a lot, what's the intelligence in the body? Now, if somebody's having a baby, you don't get up every day and think, I'm going to build the heart today, or will we put in brown or fair hair follicles? There's an intelligence will do that if you provide the environment.
Right.
And in a sense, what we're doing with Bowen is providing the environment. Plus, you're doing it with nutrition and all those other things as well. And so what we started doing, we used to do, like it says in the book, you do moves 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you have a weight. 5, 6, 7, 8, you have a weight. And it became very obvious when you get people to pay attention in their body that some people, you can do the moves and they won't feel anything, and other people will feel the moves and they'll feel it for a long, long time.
Mm.
And so we started doing the course as a mind-body course in 2002, and the first course was actually in Melbourne.
That's 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you realise?
I know, it's a worry, isn't it?
Right.
But, we did it down there, and we've learned a lot ourselves in that 15 years, and we've now got it very much more contained to a clinical way of working. Before then, we were letting the sensations go on for too long, perhaps, and it wasn't that good to work in a clinical situation with. So now what we've found over the time is you do those, we've brought it back to just do the first two moves and then put a weight in. And there's a very real reason why we do that. When you look at the connections of the muscles and meridians, you'll find that moves 1 and 2 of the low back, as to 1, 2, 3, 4 of the upper back, are linked to the erector spinae muscles, and they're linked to what's called the bladder meridian.
Right.
Now, 3 and 4 of the low back, with the glutes, and that tends to be linked, well, it is linked to the pericardium meridian. So you've actually got, it's like plucking two different strings on a guitar. And one of the ways, I guess, we work with the mind-body is to let each note have its turn before you put the next note in. And what you find, if you do that, if you do the first couple of moves, and you ask, you'd actually ask the person, pay attention, see if you feel anything. Mm-hmm. But tell them it's not a problem if they don't feel it either. And then you'll find from those same two moves, some people feel nothing, some people go their head, some people go their feet, some people go their hands, some people stay in their gut. And you've got to think, why? Why? Why when I do those two moves, do they go to different places with different people?
Mm.
And when you've worked with it as long as we have, you realise each of those people have got a different compromise in their system. And I don't usually use the word compromise, but I am now. Because it tends to be like a river that flows, and it gets to a place where somebody's put a log across the river, and you get this build-up in the area. And it's almost like the river's trying to force its way through that build-up. And when you ask, if you choose to, ask the person any reason why it might have gone to that particular area, they're just as likely to tell you that's where they fell off a roof and broke their arm, or and that's why it's gone to the arm. We've had people that are big bruises come up on their face after you've done moves 1 and 2, and you think, why would that happen? Well, ask them, and they tell you, when I was 3 and a half, I broke my cheekbone when I fell. And so the body tends to store these memories till a stage when it's ready to release them, and we just give them the opportunity. And a lot of the opportunity is in that integration time. A lot of people now are starting to realize the benefits of doing a move, allow it to complete, and then put the next one in.
I mean, that is what makes Bowen stand apart, isn't it?
Absolutely.
From many other physical modalities out there, or manual modalities out there, that difference. And it's interesting, I mean, if anyone's ever been in a class with Ozzy and he's talking about moves 1 and 2, he'll say the body gets the message, the emergency's over, it's going to be okay, the cavalry's here, you know. And I don't know, I mean, when I get those two moves, I just feel an amazingly, almost like a sweet pain with those first two moves. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So you recognise, to sort of just allow that to happen.
And it's interesting you say that, because those emergency moves, yeah, I said they were on the bladder meridian. The bladder meridian is about fear and anxiety, and so the body tends to tense in that sense. So if you do those moves and the body relaxes, it takes away that fear and anxiety, which in a sense, the emergency's over. And then the body can get on and do its own healing. It can help reset itself. So yeah, it's actually a very, you know, I think a lot of people think it's all really airy-fairy and they're doing this big emotional stuff, but it's very much about what was the original, we can use the word trauma, or the original incident that created the patterns down the track.
Right.
And it can be anything, really.
Which may become a compensatory issue, perhaps, which is a long way from the original problem. But that's what's causing the pain, but we need to undo the original problem to stop the compensation going on.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things that, you know, it's actually quite good, or really good for sports people, or people that often get shin splints and that. You go to most practitioners and they'll end up treating the lower body down because that's where the problem is. But if the river has been blocked from a head injury because they were knocked out doing something, the compromise is in the, I mean, the head is where the original trauma was, but the compromise or the lack of vitality is down through the lower body.
Right.
And so with that lack of vitality, they can injure themselves and it takes like forever to repair, or they're very vulnerable in that area of the body till they get the river thrown. It's like an electrical circuit.
Yep.
And so the way we work is almost trying to identify where in the electrical circuit is the problem. Let's get the connections happening and then the body can get on and do what it needs to do. So
in a nutshell, is it identify the meridian that's affected?
Yes.
And then work with Bowen on the areas that meridian...
Yeah, affects. Like you're looking at, for example, one of the easiest examples, if somebody feels it in finger and toe, because each of the fingers and toes is related to a particular meridian. Say, for example, they might feel it in their thumb. You're going to be looking at lung things. So you look at all the... muscles associated with the lung meridian, which are the obvious ones like serratus anterior, the diaphragm, and those more muscles of respiration. But if you're looking at the meridian comes down the arm, and they are upper body ones. But if you look at the large intestine meridian, which is the partner, the meridian comes from the index finger up the arm, across the back of the shoulder, and ends up under the nose. And yet the muscles linked with that are the hamstrings and quadratus lumborum.
Oh.
And so sometimes it can work both ways. Sometimes looking at large intestine things, the body will give you sensations to the index finger, and you can spend your life doing the neck and the shoulders and all the rest of it, whereas if you do the hamstrings or work with the quadratus lumborum, you free up the flow. And often it sorts them.
It resolves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or it gives the body the opportunity to resolve it. Mm. It's not promising you're going to get huge miracles all the time, but it gives you an avenue to take it beyond the obvious. Mm.
So it doesn't necessarily change the way you do your Bowen significantly.
Not. No. We do the same moves, usually the same sequences, but we use the messages from the body to select procedures, or to select how much we do, because if they're having long responses, we're not going to do much at all. Of course, we want those responses to settle. And so what you find, if somebody's really compromised, you often don't get much done.
Mm.
But as the body starts clearing, after a few weeks, you do more and more and more and more, and it brings the vitality up, gets the rivers flowing.
Does it take much education for the client to be able to sort of work with you on this? Is it?
Not, well, interesting thing. It's not so much for the clients to work with you like that. It's more for you to come up with words that the client understands what you... asking. If you say, are you feeling anything, a lot of people will say no. But if you say, are you more aware of one part of your body, you'll say, oh yeah, when you did the moves I could feel it wherever. But if you say the word, do you feel anything, and they go, no, I'm not feeling anything. So a lot of it's a practitioner and client trying to get a common language together, right, that they both can communicate with.
I mean, that business of bringing awareness to the body is so important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, that even the business, and I've talked about it before with Mosley, who did the experiment with regional pain syndrome, chronic regional pain syndrome in the hand, where having the patient be aware of what treatment they're getting and actually marking on a diagram where they were being touched on a hand that they couldn't see.
Yes.
So therefore they really had to concentrate on what was going on. And then the control group were encouraged to, they got the exact same treatment, but they were encouraged to read a book or a newspaper and not pay any attention to the hand at all. The results they got were remarkable.
Yes.
On the people that were aware and were mindful of the treatment they were getting.
Absolutely.
Now when we do a move and leave the room or leave the person lie there quietly without conversing with them or whatever, the only thing they've got left to listen to is their body.
Absolutely.
And the messages that they're getting from that minimal amount of stimulus that we gave them.
Absolutely.
And I think it just really, it's a great story when we say that, you know, that's why you don't have the, I mean, Anne Schubert often tells a story about how her music machine broke down. It was, she used to have the music in the room, and then she bought a brand new one, and the first day she had it, she tipped a glass of water over it and it fried.
Exactly.
And she said, okay, God, no music in the room.
Yes. So,
because, you know, to allow that, you don't want them necessarily listening to music or talking or no. You know, that sort of thing. And John Wilkes also, in his initial publication, Bow on the Inside Story, talks about, you know, if you have a conversation with somebody about what's going on and the treatment, then that's fine. But if you start asking them, you know, what was their mother-in-law's maiden name, they've got to go out of their body, retrieve some information that is nothing in relation to what's going on at all. You change the whole dynamic of the treatment and perhaps the benefits of the treatment.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the benefits if you can get out of the room. And I always say to students, if you can't get out of the room, try and sit behind them where they hopefully will forget you're in the room and they can't actually see you. But yes, talking with them or music. There's another aspect of music and also aromas and those things. We know that sound will affect the body. We know that aromas affect the body. If you want to know what's actually happening in the body, it's best not to have those, to actually see the reality of what's happening in the body as well. Mm. You can use those if you choose to as take-home stuff, but in a session it's good not to have those.
Not too much stimulus, not too much,
not
too muddying
much
the waters.
No, exactly. Keep them within their own framework. And to a certain extent, when you look at some of the traditions of the martial arts and all of those too, it's about bringing your awareness and bringing your energy back to the body rather than being, I think in a class we were looking at today, would looking at the language that people use, and some people use things like I'm beside myself with worry. They're actually describing worry as a mental thing. And if you're totally involved in your mind all the time, you're actually beside your body.
Right.
And that's that same thing. If you start talking to your clients, you're actually taking them out of the awareness of their body and putting them in their mental body, for want of a better way of explaining it. And so I think if people try it and just ask the person just explore what they're feeling, but don't make it like a test.
No.
They may feel nothing. Mm. And that could be because we just haven't explained it well enough, or it could be that they are actually beside themselves because they're over-concerned about something, and that's another.
And it may take more than one treatment to bring that awareness
absolutely
into the body, perhaps.
Absolutely. But there's been various other forms of therapy, like focusing and things like that. They find just bringing the awareness through the body starts the healing mechanism.
Right.
So if we can combine all that sort of thing, because we're not doing more moves, we're not doing anything, and we just enhance our sessions.
Fantastic. Margaret, it's been an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you. And I think this is only halfway through, so I think we'll have to catch up again another time, because I want to talk about you. You've obviously travelled a lot and taught overseas a lot, and I'd love to have a chat about the way that you've been able to sort of help to spread Bowen around the world anyway.
Thank you. No, it's been a pleasure.
That's fantastic. And we can put in the show notes perhaps some information about the Mind-Body course.
Yeah.
And where you're at and how that goes. And if people want to make contact via some other method, they can do that perhaps.
Yeah. Well, they can just go on the BTO website and look at
find out where
the
it all is.
Search and
great. Mm. Okay. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Absolute pleasure.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to another episode of the Bow and Buzz podcast. So I hope you've enjoyed that. If you'd like to ask a question or suggest someone we could interview, please let us know by going over to the comments page. And if you'd like to leave a review on iTunes, that'd be help us get the word out there and spread the news about the Bow and Buzz podcast. This has been Chris Reed. Have a great day. Enjoy the buzz.